This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:37 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Hezril. And our next story is focusing on mental health, but perhaps not necessarily the conversation that we have been having. Mm. We wanted to focus this time on what the situation has been among migrant workers and what sorts of resources they can access to address mental health issues, because it has been a tough year.
Yeah, and Malaysia Kini actually published an article on this last week, looking at the specifics, particularly because we're seeing alarming suicide numbers this year. And many migrant workers have been facing their own set of pressures amid COVID-19, right? Whether it's financial, emotional, or mental. And if they're young newlyweds, for instance, they might have more financial commitments and find it tougher to cope.
Right. And while we're talking about tougher to cope, I think just to look at the statistics, right? Because according to Bukit Aman, 49 foreigners have committed suicide this year. And a police source told Malaysia Kini that most are believed to be migrant workers, since a lot of the cases actually occurred in workers' dorms.
Yeah, but the figures could be underreported because Adrian Pereira, the executive director of the North-South Initiative, says that workers tend to be reluctant when it comes to reporting suicide cases because they want to avoid being penalized by the authorities.
Mm. And so, I mean, there's so many things to address here, right? Like to your last point about suicides being penalized by the authorities, there we come to the point about decriminalizing, which is a conversation that's been had for much of this year, whether or not we are going to actually see efforts in that. And I think when you look at migrant workers who are even more vulnerable than most, I think this idea of criminalizing an act of what in many cases might be desperation, I think makes it that much worse.
Yeah, and we've touched on the many resources that you know Malaysians can access, but when it comes to foreign workers, if we look at their reluctance to not even report it, then you know what. I'm just curious as to, you know, I guess whether they're willing or how confident they are, how confident would they be when it comes to, you know, reaching out to resources, to address these issues?
Well, that and also whether or not the availability of those resources are understood, because I think every time we talk about mental health on the show and we discuss the various numbers or the community-based initiatives that do exist, that don't necessarily have to cost a bundle, you know, that you don't necessarily have to, you can go online, you can access mental health care in so many different ways. And yet, every time, I think there is a certain level of disbelief or people not being aware of that. And we're talking there about people who are fluent in Malaysian life, you know, who are used to living online, who have a fair amount of resources. And if you compare that perhaps to the migrant worker community and let's say what available time is left after work, let's say what resources are available, I just have my doubts about whether or not there is an awareness.
Yeah. And I guess on that, I guess part of the conversation is also, you know, what kind of long-term solutions can be implemented, you know, to address mental health even after COVID-19, right? And to perhaps make sure that whatever solutions we come up with perhaps aren't just, you know, for the short term and for now, but also just you know, ahead of time in general.
So we've been talking for quite a while now about the idea that mental health, right, is going to potentially be the next big crisis looming, if it isn't already, in light of what a tough year it's been and the stresses that we're all under because of COVID-19. And now we want to look more closely at how it is affecting migrant workers. If you have any thoughts you'd like to share with us, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be crossing over after this to Dr. Sharuna Verghese, co-founder and director of Health Equity Initiatives. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It's 5:43 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Hezril. We're talking now about mental health and particularly mental health among the migrant worker community. And for that, we're joined by Dr. Sharuna Verghese, co-founder and director of Health Equity Initiatives. Dr. Sharuna, thank you so much for joining us. Can you talk to us about the issues that you've seen on the ground that are resulting in mental health issues?
Yeah, well, if you're looking at the living and working conditions, then, you know, it's not very difficult to imagine the stressors that they are subjected to. Migrant workers, you know, for them, there are a lot of transitions and adjustments that they have to make after arrival, and they lose the familiar social support systems that they have back in their country of origin. Most have borrowed enormous amounts of money, often, you know, pledging the little bit of land or cattle that they have as collateral. But work conditions in Malaysia are very stressful. You know, we know that domestic workers work in very isolated conditions, long hours of work, very little protection of their work rights. And many NGOs have been reporting about forced labor among migrant workers in Malaysia. In fact, in a study that we did with refugees some years ago, we found that about a third of the study population had experienced forced labor and mental health problems such as depression and anxiety, which were actually quite high and much higher than the levels that we see in the Malaysian population. But I think the important thing to remember is that these mental health problems are quite avoidable. They are linked to human rights violations, which can easily be remedied with humane policies, which are, you know, cognizant of the rights of migrant workers.
And how have the recent outbreaks of COVID-19 in dormitories or living quarters exacerbated these issues?
Well, as I shared earlier, the underlying issues have always existed. I think what COVID has done is that it's put that spotlight on these issues, exposed the inequalities and actually these long simmering problems. You know, the problems of poor and overcrowded living conditions, often with no proper running water and hygiene in kongsis in the construction sector, for example. This has been a long-standing problem. So it's not a surprise that, you know, we saw these COVID-19 clusters in kongsis at the construction sites and dormitories, you know, really linked to factories. I mean, one would imagine that we would have learned from Singapore's experience earlier in the year and taken steps to avert such a situation. But, you know, unfortunately, migrant health is not a priority. Migrants are seen as, you know, the other. There is no appreciation of the contributions of migrant workers, which have been actually quite substantively documented by agencies such as the World Bank. And so, you know, within all this, you know, the kind of hate speech we saw against migrants, the arrests of migrants, which went contrary to the earlier statement made by the Ministry of Health that they would not be arrested, the weak regulation of employers to provide adequate protection during this time, it kind of drove the problem underground. And many migrants actually lived in much fear during this time. So I think it, you know, it put a spotlight on an already existing long simmering problem.
Right. And are there any systems of support for migrant workers to access mental health care? And what are the barriers?
I mean, the barriers are plenty. I think, first of all, the insurance coverage that actually covers migrant workers does not cover mental health. In fact, mental health is an exclusion. And then, you know, our healthcare system is actually not geared towards providing that kind of user-friendly mental health services that is, you know, culturally appropriate in a language that they understand. You know, there are hardly any systems in place. There is much scope to do much more than what we have right now.
So given these barriers, what type of outreach has been possible?
Yeah, actually, I'm not aware of any concerted mental health program for migrant workers currently. There are a lot of other awareness-raising programs on their labor rights, on sexual reproductive health, on HIV, but I'm not sure of, you know, programs that actually exist for migrant workers. But, you know, when it comes to refugees and asylum seekers, I think there are far more mental health interventions on the ground compared to migrant workers in this country.
Okay, so that being said, could you perhaps also talk a little bit more about what mental health outreach programs are like for refugees and whether those programs can perhaps be transposed to the migrant working community?
Yeah, sure. So there are a range of mental health programs. So, for example, we have an annual training of community health workers on mental health where refugee members of the community go through a 8-month training on mental health and how they can identify signs and symptoms, do simple supportive interventions, how they can make referrals for people that they identify in their community as needing mental health care, being that bridge between the clinicians, the social workers, the psychosocial support workers, and the community, not just linguistically, but also in terms of that building of trust. There are also community-based outreach and psychoeducation programs where we go out in the community and talk about stress, about depression, about anxiety, how they can manage problems of sleep, how they can manage their stress. And there are also specific programs that we have, especially for women refugees who tend to be more isolated because just culturally and being at home most of the time and not being active in the labor market, as it were. So we have something called support groups. And this is especially important for women who are recovering or have recovered to enable them to stay in remission and to prevent relapse, to connect them with other women. So these are facilitated support groups. There's treatment adherence support for those who are in psychiatric treatment to, you know, make sure that they complete the treatment so that they can go back to being and leading their productive lives. So there are a range of interventions. There are psychological, behavioral interventions like counseling and so on.
Now, if we look at our neighbors, Singapore, they recently implemented a task force focused on improving awareness of mental health issues among migrant workers. Is this something that we could explore here in Malaysia too?
Yes, definitely. I think there are a range of things we can do. The task force would be a good idea in terms of, you know, looking at the macro level, at decisions and at actions that need to be taken at, you know, levels of policy, at the levels of the employer, the level of the community and so on, you know, in terms of coming out with a blueprint. But really, because this is a hard-to-reach population and there is already a deficit of trust, and we need to build trust. That's important for the uptake of, you know, whatever interventions are offered. It is very important that the community is participating in these programs that are developed for them, and there is that ownership. So besides the task force, I mean, there are different things that can be done at the level of the workplace and as well as at the level of the community.
So on that then, maybe we can follow up and, you know, what are some things that we can do right now to provide support in the immediate sense?
Yeah. So I think these mental health problems are actually being triggered by structural problems, the absence of a coherent policy of, you know, proper regulation of, you know, proper enforcement of protections of workers. So in the immediate short term, the government can actually play a decisive role in ensuring that these triggers are addressed and also ensuring that mental health resources are made available for migrant workers, especially because it is not covered by SKIPA, which is their health insurance. And embassies of sending countries also need to be quite actively engaged in reaching out to their nationals and to, you know, be providing support to them. Equally important is, you know, raising the mental health awareness among migrants themselves, because there's still a lot of stigma attached to mental health, and, you know, socializing these ideas among them. And, you know, also immediately there are also some mobile health apps which can be explored, because the WHO has actually developed some digital apps on mental health, and it's probably available in, you know, some of the languages of the migrants. So we may not need to actually reinvent the wheel, networking, linking up with those who are already doing the work and looking at what exists. But I think employers also, you know, need to do their part to understand that this is easily treatable, and actually in facilitating this kind of support for their workers, they actually improve the, you know, productivity, as well as it addresses, you know, problems of absenteeism which might arise from ill health. It would also help to avoid the cost of emergency medical health care if a problem becomes acute. So maybe mental health screening at the workplace for early identification and, you know, early intervention. But this all has to be, you know, seen as part of not only the obligation, but also benefiting employers and our economy.
Earlier, you touched on community involvement as a possible approach. What, you know, on that note, what can the public do to help?
Yes, I think what we are seeing with the pandemic is, you know, overall, there are high levels of anxiety that are being experienced by people in general. We have also seen, you know, in several countries, suicide rates going up. I think with migrant workers, what we actually might be observing is this being a more silent phenomenon. It just so happened that, you know, Malaysia Kini picked it up and published it, you know. Otherwise, before that, one would not have even known that this was happening in the migrant community. And so I think that we should be preparing in terms of, you know, mental health problems, which actually some people are saying might be the next pandemic. And the resources, especially in reducing suicide risk and preventing suicides, we need to look at universal approaches where, you know, we are also including the migrant worker population in those initiatives. What is currently happening is that, you know, we have a lot of good policies and programs when it comes to health, but migrant workers are, you know, always left out of these. Somehow they are seen as not deserving, or that it's as if they are taking up resources. They are not included, whereas we don't see that, you know, from colonial times to now, the migrant population has made an immense contribution to this country. And, I mean, while we have these blueprints and these programs, and while we also strengthen the specialist services, we need to also focus on building non-specialist capacities. So, for example, frontliners, first responders, you know, even at the workplace, just raising awareness on mental health, having people who are, you know, frontliners to whom migrant workers might go to if they have a problem, you know, equipping them with certain skills that they can respond to immediately, that they're able to identify, you know, that there is a bigger problem behind this. Building those kind of mental health capacities, you know, it's being done in several places, and that's something that we can also do as a nation, which would benefit not only migrant workers, but Malaysians in general also.
Thank you for speaking with us, Dr. Sharuna. That was Dr. Sharuna Verghese, co-founder and director of Health Equity Initiatives, discussing mental health welfare for migrant worker communities. If you have any thoughts you'd like to share on this, you can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, some music to take us to the 6 o'clock news. It's The Beatles with There's a Place, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.